Howdy do, buckaroos. This is Kelly Gamont here with the final day of interviews that I did at WWDC this year. I recorded some people at AltConf and got to talk to some people who were actually attending DubDub itself. And I definitely want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors who helped make all of this coverage possible. Dave's going to tell you about one a little bit later in the show. And first up, I'm going to talk to Alexei Navikov, who makes the contact sharing app Slip, which is very, very cool. If you haven't tried it, I totally recommend it. And then after that, I have Paul Kafasis of Rogue Amoeba, and he chats with me about audio on the Mac and how what got announced this week is going to mess up whatever else he had planned for the summer. Enjoy. Hey everyone, this is Kelly Gamont. I am here doing the Daily Observations podcast live at WWDC. I'm actually next door to WWDC at AltConf, and I'm interviewing people about what they saw this week. And I'm here today with Alexei Navikov from Yodel Code. And Alexei, tell us about the app that you work on.
So the app I'm working on right now and spending all my time on is called Slip. And it is an app that makes it really easy for two people to exchange contact information between each other securely and privately. And it, unfortunately, is most useful when everybody has it, and not
yes.
many people have it yet. And so there's a feature in there right now that allows you to share contact info with QR code
okay.
with anybody. And coming later this summer will be business card scanning. And so it really, I want to make it sort of the premier app that people mm-hmm. use for face-to-face networking.
Now, one thing that was my first thought, that was a lot of people's first thought, I discovered this app last year at an event here in San Jose, and one of the things that a lot of people said about it was, you need this, it's like Bump. Which was a great app for people who don't remember when the accelerometer stuff the gyroscopes got really interesting in the iPhones. You just did a little fist bump with your contact up, and the app would share your contact with the other person who had it. And it was great. There was an Android version, so lots of people could have it, and it was very shareable. So it was really nice to see people excited about it. So I'm always excited because sharing contacts is weird. One of the things I like about your app is the persona piece, where you know, you've got your home phone and your cell phone and your work phone and three or four email addresses and a couple of Twitter handles and a couple of websites and your home address and your mailing address, all these things that are in your massive contact, and you don't have to share that entire thing with everybody when you're using Slip.
Yeah, correct. There's an ability to set up multiple personas or identities, and then within each one you get to cherry pick which specific item you want to share. And so it gives complete flexibility and complete control. Otherwise, this app wouldn't be that useful because nobody wants to share all their information. And just getting back to Bump for a second, when I first heard of Bump, I loved it as an idea. It was a brilliant idea, but in practice, it was challenging.
Yes.
and so for a lot of different reasons, because it was dependent on a lot of complicated infrastructure, like GPS and internet access and so on.
Yes.
And one of the beautiful things about Slip is that it's peer-to-peer Bluetooth. So there's no other dependency on any other technology.
And so if you're in a place where there are tens of thousands of people all on the same Wi-Fi or all on the same cell tower, and maybe your connection's not that great, it doesn't matter, which was part of what was really appealing to me about it, was it doesn't matter what the rest of your connectivity situation looks like.
And so people that know Bump or had used Bump in the past, I just tell them Slip is just like Bump, but without the Bump.
That's it. So you got to see the keynote and the keynote in the State of the Union on Monday, where we talked about, we got a sneak peek at like what's coming down the way. What in that was the most exciting to you personally? Like, I'm really looking forward to when this is finally something out in the world.
Well, you know, this is sort of 1 year that kind of 1 year WWDC that has kind of blown my mind. And
just that's good. It's very on brand with all of the signage and everything that goes around.
Very on brand
with it this year.
And there's just a lot of different technologies that either impact the work that I'm doing right now, or that I've been waiting for quite some time.
Okay.
And just to highlight a couple of things, Core Data with iCloud Kit, or CloudKit with Core Data.
Mm-hmm.
I love Core Data as an underlying technology for persisting user content. And but it's difficult to synchronize Core Data information between devices, and so to finally have that, I'm very excited about. And then Swift UI is just, you know, I have a lot of questions about it. I love the approach. I love the fact that it's all based on structures and not classes. It seems like Apple's going to make us all functional programmers one way or another.
Yeah, I get the feeling, like it or not,
yeah,
I'm going to be building iOS apps.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, because it's just, yeah.
So it looks like they make it really easy with a lot of great tools. But I have a lot of questions because I don't know, you know, what's the learning curve going to be like? Am I going to have the complete flexibility that I have now? And that's really important to me because I love crafting a user experience. And I love delighting people and doing something that's like natural and simple, something that, you know, I like to use a lot of gestures for everything. And I just don't know how easy it's going to be to do that with Swift UI. But Swift UI is probably the biggest thing of everything I've heard of in the keynote.
Okay. And so what do you think, aside from the parts that impact you and your development work, what are, like, aside from Swift UI, because that will obviously impact your day-to-day development over time, what do you think, like, as consumer features, are some of the things that were the most interesting to come from that?
Well, one side effect of Swift UI, I think, will be more robust apps, and I think that's great for everybody.
Yes, fingers crossed.
Yes, fingers crossed. Of course, Apple is touting dark mode quite a bit, and I know that will have an indirect benefit to customers with their phones because it'll use less battery for the screen, which is great.
Yeah.
And so I'm very curious about how much work that's going to take to get my apps working with dark mode.
Yeah.
And then I've seen some, you know, the demos they had around augmented reality and the AR kit were really exciting. And I'm not sure how that's going to impact my own development work yet.
Right.
But it's great to see Apple moving that forward.
I'm also interested in those things, and I've sort of been doing an informal survey. Have you installed anything that was announced on Monday?
That is what?
The betas. Have you installed the developer betas yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I've got, I've installed iOS 13 and a new Mac OS and the new Xcode, and I've been trying to get the Swift UI Playground working, or preview, and that hasn't worked for me, but I'm assuming there's going to be new updated releases next week.
It's the first beta.
It's the first beta.
Yeah, that's always hard to say.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to? Like, we're standing here at AltConf right now. What have you seen this week so far that's interesting, or what are you looking forward to that's coming in the next week?
I'm interested in a couple of things. One is, three things, and they all sort of pertain directly to Slip.
Mm-hmm.
One is there's a new cryptographic library that's coming out, and so it'll be So that'll make things easier to do cryptographic algorithms. There is extended support for Core NFC, which may impact SLIP. I'm very curious to see if that is going to provide an alternative way for people to connect that either SLIP will take advantage of, or it may actually be easier than SLIP. I don't know. I have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And the one thing I do know that I've got with SLIP is just with the colors and the patterns, it's just a very magical experience. I am making SLIP more useful to others. Will be releasing business card scanning capabilities built into SLIP. And I know Apple has announced, and there's going to be some talks later this week on text recognition and image scanning.
Yeah.
And so I know Apple's going to make it easier for developers to incorporate those kind of features. I probably won't wait for that because I've already been developing that for the last year.
Yeah.
But to take advantage of that when iOS 13 comes out, definitely.
That sounds interesting. It was really nice to talk to you. I'm glad you made it. And where can people find SLIP?
So SLIP is available from the App Store, and you can download it directly if you go to app.slip2.me.
Okay.
Or if you just want to go straight to my website where there's some useful information, just go to slip2.me.
Right. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Kelly. I appreciate it.
Greetings all, and thanks, Kelly, for all these great interviews that you've been doing all week long. I'm Dave Hamilton, and I would like to take a minute to ask you to please join us all here at the Mac Observer and Daily Observations in thanking E3 Software, makers of Direct Mail for the Mac, for sponsoring our WWDC, easy for me to say, WWDC coverage here in 2019 this year. Here's the reality. Email marketing is the number one most cost-effective way to reach your customers and grow your business, even beating out social media channels like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. For the past 15 years, Mac users around the world have trusted the Direct Mail app to handle all of their email marketing needs. We use Direct Mail for Mac here, too, at TMO and at Backbeat Media, and we love it because it's an app designed for the Mac, right? Which means it's fast, it's easy to use, it works great, and it works with all the other apps and services we already use. And the price is right, too. These folks really have got it priced so that it just works for whatever level you're at with your business. With Direct Mail, you can quickly and easily compose high-quality emails that just look great on both mobile and desktop. You can get in-depth campaign reports that show you who is reading and clicking and who is even sharing the stuff you send out, all your newsletters and whatever it is you want to put together. And you can grow your mailing list by creating email sign-up forms for your website or Facebook page. And you can save yourself the time and the headache because, as I said before, Direct Mail integrates with over 1,000 other apps and services on your Mac and that you use all over the web. It's so cool. Direct Mail can even send email campaigns for you automatically without you lifting a finger, truly automating the process of staying in touch with your customers, your audience, and more. And if you're a Mac or iPhone user, which I know you are, you know how much nicer it is to use a purpose-built app instead of some clunky web app that's sort of shoehorned into whatever interface you're choosing to use. And if you run into a jam, you also know how nice it is to have real, human, live chat customer support available to answer your questions. And this is why you want to use Direct Mail, because it offers all of this and more. Direct Mail is free to download and get started. And because you're a TMO reader and a TDO listener, you can save 10% off of all their full feature pricing plans by visiting directmailmac.com/TMO. That's for the Mac Observer. So directmailmac.com/TMO. You save 10% off all their full featured pricing plans. Go check it out. It's free to download and get started. You'll definitely be glad you did. Tell them thanks for us, because we want to say thanks to them too. Thanks to you, Direct Mail, and the folks at E3 Software for doing what you do and also for sponsoring us here this week as part of our WWDC. 2019 coverage. Thanks so much, and back to you, Kelly.
Hey everyone, Kelly Gamont here from Daily Observations. I am near WWDC. I am at AltConf, and I'm here interviewing developers all week. And today I am talking to Paul Kafasis from Rogue Amoeba. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. And we're so near that we can see WWDC.
We're looking upon it.
Yeah, down upon it, in fact, yeah.
Yes, as we speak. Now, for people who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about you and Rogue Amoeba.
Sure. As you said, my name is Paul Kafasis. I run a company called Rogue Amoeba. I co-founded it 17 years ago. We make audio products for the Mac and tools for recording, editing, broadcasting. Anything you want to do with audio on the Mac, you should hopefully come check us out, and hopefully we have a tool for you.
And I will point out, if people who are listening to the show think that Paul's name or Paul's company sound familiar, we've mentioned Audio Hijack in the past as an app we were concerned about with sandboxing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Becoming more restrictive and things like that.
Don't look for us in the Mac App Store. Look for us at our website, yes. MacAudio.com. And
I was gonna
got my pitch in there already, so that's good.
There you go. I was going to say, yeah, Rogue Amoeba, good luck finding them. One of the things that has come up is you know, the restrictions on the Mac and the sandboxing and the kind of access that apps like yours tend to require. So on Monday, we got all kinds of announcements. There was the public stuff in the morning, the developer-only kind of stuff in the afternoon. But did you see that was the most interesting to you? Not necessarily that because
sure.
It impacts what you're doing, but...
To me, the thing I've been saying to everybody this week is the new Mac Pro for several reasons. But obviously everyone had been waiting for this hardware. They've been hearing about it. Apple pre-announced this hardware 2017, I think. Fall of 2017 is when they had
something like that.
It might even be 2016. Quite a while ago, they said, "Hey, we're working on a new Mac Pro," and everyone said, "Great," because the current one is not great and hasn't been updated enough. And it's taken quite a while, but it is finally, not yet actually here, but finally visible. You can see it. You know that it exists. So that is a portion of the market that Apple just wasn't covering very well. They had the iMac Pro, and that's a very powerful machine, but it's not the machine that video editors want when they are currently using four machines right next to each other.
Yes.
An iMac Pro doesn't really work for that.
Right.
And you're buying a display that you might not really need. And the Mac Mini that they updated last October is very powerful. It's great, but it is still not the high, super high-end machine that a lot of niche markets need. So that was, we knew it was coming, but it was very good to see that it is here or will be here. It exists at least,
yeah.
And we have some idea on what it is. The other thing that I've been saying, though, is that how long have you used a Mac, Kelly?
85.
Okay, so yeah, so that's about where I am. So, you know, what's that, 25 years, whatever. Oh, wow, more than that, right?
No, it's
30 years. 30 years.
I'm like, no, I was younger than that. Yeah,
yeah.
It's been, yeah.
30 plus years.
Longer than I am emotionally prepared to admit on
that's
a podcast.
That's fine. Decades.
Yes.
In the 90s and certainly the early 2000s, the machine to get, if you were at all a computer person, was a tower. You got the
yes.
G3 tower that opened up. It was really
if
cool.
You need a real computer.
You got a tower.
Yes, and it had that little latch, and you popped the side
and popped
open,
it open, and
it all
then you
flopped
could
out, and you could just
put a PCI card in there. Yeah, put some more RAM in there.
Oh,
and
that was a beautiful machine. I'm all just thinking, oh, that blew my tower.
Yeah,
so pretty.
Absolutely. And then
yeah.
and then the G4 and the G5 had similar towers that all worked very similarly. They looked nice. And the last one we had like that was the Mac Pro, the cheese grater tower.
Yes.
And then they did this trash can design that is just going to be resigned to the trash can of history.
We're not going to talk about it.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's used as a container now for iPod socks.
Yes, absolutely.
That's all it's for.
The other most useful product they made. But so this new tower physically looks like the towers that we used to buy and that used to cost us. They were not cheap, but they were, I think you could get one for $15 to $2,000 and you would ramp it up from there, but it was not totally out of reach. And the dollar has, you know, we have inflation, whatever, but computers have stayed about the same price in
mm-hmm.
the $1 to $2,000 range. And suddenly Apple says, hey, we've got this great new tower. It starts at $6,000.
Yep.
And I think immediately there were a lot of people that said, oh, God, that's so expensive. And it absolutely is. But the thing that I think people have to realize is that that is no longer the computer for us.
Right.
I have been using a laptop and a Mac Mini for several years now. If you need a more powerful machine, the iMac and then the iMac Pro are for you. The Tower is a much more niche market of people that need that. Whereas, again, 20 years ago, that's what I bought. That's what you bought. That's what everybody who wanted a higher-end computer got.
Right.
So that to me has been the biggest topic of conversation, to get back to your original question, from the announcements. As far as the software side of things, which obviously affects our company much more, there was nothing that jumped out as, okay, we need to deal with that. Last year, dark mode on the Mac was, okay, we're going to have to start working on that. And we've been around, as I said, 17 years, and we've never really said, all right, we have to get on the new technology every time. We never really wanted to be on that treadmill. And so dark mode, we're just now starting to ship updates for, because it doesn't need to be done on day one, we don't think. And the tools will sell themselves without having the hot new technology. So there was nothing that jumped out as, okay, we have to implement that immediately or anything like that. But it's always good to see macOS get updated and got a whole lot of time in the keynote. Some years it has been sort of, in the past, it has been sort of the ugly stepchild.
Look at all this stuff we did for iPhone. And also there's a new Mac version coming by.
There's some new Mac stuff, exactly. So yeah, that's sort of where my head was at after the keynote, that there was a whole lot of information. I was glad to see some new hardware, even if I'm not going to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope some of that stuff will trickle down in the hardware, you know, the gorgeous display and the anti-reflective nano-etching that they're doing. You know, I'd love to see that on the laptops, maybe next year, maybe in 5 years, whatever.
Yeah.
But there was a whole lot of information, but not necessarily a whole lot of stuff that directly impacted us and myself.
And I feel the same way. Like, that machine, I think my lukewarm take on it was people aren't going to buy this new machine. Pixar is going to buy this
companies
machine.
Companies are going to buy this machine.
ILM, whatever. Yep. That's where that's going.
That's a great summary of it, absolutely.
Like, that, yeah, this is not a thing a person's going to go out and buy. But, like, just because this one isn't doesn't mean something of that design or something of that upgradability, being able to pop something out and pop in the new thing. You know, once we realize that terabytes of RAM is the norm, you know, because I remember going, what am I going to do with 4 gigabytes?
Right, absolutely.
Right? Like, who needs, you know, who needs 2 gigabytes of RAM?
Yep.
That's ridiculous. You know, like, I remember having those conversations. I remember, you know, graphics cards, like 512 megabytes of memory. You know, so, you know, part of the appeal of those machines, those older towers, was the upgradability on them. Because, yeah, I'm sinking more money into this than I would a laptop, but I'm basically going to go through 2 or 3 iterations of this
chassis. It's going to last you much longer, yeah.
The innards are going to get swapped out a few times before I go to the next thing.
Yep, absolutely.
So
I'd love to see a return to some upgradability on more than just the tower.
And
I don't know if we will. But
my hope is that that's the thing that trickles down.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe that the next time we get a mini, which hopefully won't be 2025,
right?
That the next mini will have some sort of interesting thing that came from the work that they did on this machine, or that the displays, like, that's the thing I think is going to be the biggest iteration. I mean, Apple's back in the display market. Like, display market. Like, yes, you can buy a screen from Apple. It just happens to have a computer slapped on the back.
Right.
Which is not quite the same thing. So, Apple getting back into the display game, I thought, was a really big thing. And I'm hopeful, like you, that some of what went into this machine is going to eventually come down to a machine that I'm going to buy.
Yeah,
whatever
absolutely that
is. So, because it's not one of those.
Yeah.
Now, if it showed up in my house, I would give it a kind and loving home.
Uh-huh.
But
I don't know. If it showed up at my house, I might say, you know what, I'm going to sell this and just get a couple laptops or something.
Oh, true. I could buy a whole lot of laptops
for
the amount of money for that machine. But at least in the short term, I would give it a good and loving home.
Uh-huh.
And that home would only have one mortgage on it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I would still have one of these machines, and that would be amazing. So you talked about the stuff that was interesting in the note. What came out of that may be part of what you spend this summer working
summer
on? Yeah.
Well, so anytime there's an OS update, I don't need to pitch our products too much or anything, but our products do a lot of stuff with audio that requires some back-end wizardry.
It's
not just part of the OS. So we capture audio from other applications. Audio Hijack records audio from any app on your Mac, and so to get that audio from your web browser or Spotify or something. There's not just a call that is part of OS X that says, hey, give me that audio. So we do a lot of work to get that audio. And every time there's an OS update, we need to adjust that work.
Yeah.
And so there have been, core audio is the audio component of macOS, and that has seen a bunch of changes in this update, actually. We've just been poking at it in the past couple days.
Okay.
Nothing really substantive, but it seems more like shuffling things around, possibly for other platforms, for tvOS or iOS, and sort of centralizing the way that this all works on all the platforms. But that's something that we'll spend a bunch of time making things work again, basically.
Right.
So when there's a new OS, all of our software says, hey, I don't run on that yet. You're going to need an update, and we'll let you know. Yeah, exactly. And so just today I was updating our website to put up that notice so that when someone visits from 10:15, it'll say, hey, we're working on it, but, you know, it'll be a little while. Some tools, they can be very complex, but they're not doing something that the new OS will instantly impact. And so it might just already run on there. Whereas our software, we know that it's likely to not work the way we want it to, so we actually stop it from running there until we have an update. That's the very first thing we do any year is, okay, we need to determine what we're going to need to change, see how long it's going to take, test it, and determine exactly when we want to release it. Because we don't want to do it too early because things change. The OS is not done.
Right.
We developers have a copy of it. The public gets a copy in July if they want it,
right.
Which I'm very down on. Anyone listening, I suggest you wait until the fall. People won't listen, but that's okay. But then, you know, there are still several months worth of changes coming, and so we don't want to do this too early. And obviously, we don't want to make people wait. If we had it working today, we would make something available. But it will take longer to make it available, to make it work, and then make it available after that. So that's the simple answer I could give every single year. And like I said, this year there's not anything obvious like dark mode was last year. So we're still working on dark mode for most of our apps. We have got a couple that have it already. Just updates for compatibility, really. I don't know if you recall that in mid-2000s, Apple made a pitch that they were slowing down the pace of macOS updates.
Yes.
Because they had been annual, so like 10.0, 10.1, 10.0 and 10.1 was less than a year.
Yeah.
Because 10.0 was very bad.
Because 10.0, yeah.
Very bad.
Oh, yeah.
But then 10.1, 10.2, 10.3, it was every year.
Yeah.
And I think it was around 10.4, 10.5. I think it was Avi Tavainen, came out and said, you know, we're going to slow down a little bit, 18 months, 24 months for a new OS.
I think.
And that lasted like one or two updates.
Four was like Tiger,
Tiger.
And I think
and
it was Tiger
Leopard.
When they were like, it's going to be like Tiger or Leopard, because then Snow Leopard was like, this is the one where we just did all the bolt tightening.
Just bug fixes, right.
Yeah.
But they came out and said it's not going to be every year.
Right.
And then that lasted literally like one or two updates.
And that was one round of updates,
yeah.
I think, was all we got
and
out
then,
of that, like, year and a half. Yeah.
And then, but now, then they immediately went back and said, all right, we're doing it every year again.
Yeah.
And as a developer, I love that there's new stuff, but we don't, like I said, we don't adopt that immediately.
Right.
So if it took a little longer for the OS to come out, if it was every 2 years, it would mean there's less churn for us every summer.
Right.
But, you know, customers want new features, everybody wants shiny new things, so we're not going to be able to tilt against that windmill. So if the OS updates ever slowed down, we would have a little more time to do more feature work, but we have to balance it. And so every summer it's a month or two or three of updates, and obviously those updates are not just compatibility updates. We add features and things like that, but we don't get to focus as much on just the product itself.
Right. So I'm springing this on you a little bit.
Uh-oh.
With the newly announced iPad OS, and Apple finally admitting that there's a whole lot of capability there that they, you know, kind of weren't admitting to, does that interest you as a developer in any way? Like, looking at, you know, maybe it would be really good if there were audio hijack on an iPad to do exactly what we're doing right now, which is recording something using an iPad. And it's okay if the answer is, Kelly, you're limited.
No. Well, look, the iOS platform, forget the iPad, just the phone and the iPad. The phone and the iPad. There are billions of these devices.
Yes.
And we have very little software for them because the devices are very locked down by Apple.
Yes.
And the things that we do on the Mac are not possible to do on iOS and ship in the App Store. And because you can only ship software for the iPad and the iPhone in the App Store, you have to follow the rules. And
So here we are.
where we're still focused on the Mac.
So you are a Mac software company for that reason.
Exactly.
Yes.
And very early on, 2007 when the iPhone came out, or 2008 I suppose when the App Store came out, and then when the iPad first came out, people said, "Oh, you know, you're going to have to, you got to move over, you got to do it." And we did some experimentation. We had a couple products that, you know, just didn't succeed very well for a multitude of reasons. But we said, you know what, we make a lot of revenue on the Mac. That's where the vast majority of our revenue is coming from. That's where our users are. That's what we're good at. That's what we like doing. We're going to focus on that, and we'll keep our eye on everything else. So obviously something like this is a big announcement that says, you know, we're making this more of a computer, basically. They didn't say exactly that, but we're making the iPad
more... But that's what
more,
they said.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's interesting, but the problem I see is that it's still locked down. So, you know, they added a file system, and they added, you know, all sorts of things that are fundamental parts of the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But they did not add the ability to just release the software that we want to release without going through the App Store.
Right.
So... The short answer is I did not walk out of there saying, all right, we're finally going to make Audio Hijack for the iPad, because we can't. We still can't. The longer answer is it certainly is interesting and something to pay attention to internally for us, that maybe we're getting closer to something where to a place where we can do something useful. Maybe we need to consider what exactly we would do on such a platform as that platform matures into sort of a higher-end computing platform that we're more skilled at. I think the iPhone is it's a ridiculous platform. It's got billions of users, but the depth of the applications on the iPhone is, on average, fairly shallow. And the depth of an application on the Mac is much deeper, and we've always enjoyed making a deep app with a lot of features. And that's hard to do on iOS, hard to do on the phone, hard to do on the iPad still.
Well, it's hard if you're not Apple.
Right, absolutely. But it's hard to sell because, you know, things have gotten better in that regard. But before in-app purchases, you know, if you just said it's either free or you have to pay for it, if you make a deep app, it needs to cost $20 or $30 to support that development time. And if people can't even get a trial of it, they shouldn't pay that. They should be skeptical of paying that much money. So it was an ecosystem that wasn't friendly to the way we operated. And hopefully some of that stuff is changing, and we're always keeping our eyes on it. But again, the short answer to your question is that this summer I'm not going to start working on an iPad version of anything, but it's always in the back of our heads.
So we have to go because I'm going to stop recording and try to convince Paul to change his mind on this. Or at a minimum, when it is time for Audio Hijack for iPad, to at least let me in on the beta.
All right.
So, Paul, thanks so much for coming by. And one more time, just tell people where they can find out more about Rogue Amoeba.
So if you Google Rogue Amoeba, because you can't spell it, because no one can spell it.
Because Rogue Amoeba.
You'll find us. But MacAudio.com we got a few years ago. So that's a pretty easy domain to find.
All right. And thanks so much for coming by and talking to me today.
Thank you.